This is Grappling Real. I'm your host, Chris Parker, and today we have a good buddy of mine, Joe Gilpin, a purple belt competitor from the Yamasaki Academy and an employee of BJJ Fanatics. So welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you for having me, Chris. It's wonderful. I can't wait to do the show. We've been talking about it, and for me to finally get on here and be able to share a mic with you is really awesome.
Likewise, brother. So what is it like working for the biggest martial arts, you said, distributor in the world, right?
Martial arts video distributor in the world. Yeah, we're number one. BJJ Fanatics, for anybody that's not up with it, we're the people who make like all the instructional videos, the Donaher stuff might come to mind. These people in the room over there are looking at us. But we rented this room. Man, it's amazing. It's a really cool company. It was founded by Bernardo Faria and Michael Zanga. And there's an unseen third partner there. There's another Michael who's kind of just behind the scenes. But they're just really good guys. They're really patient. They're really giving and appreciative of bosses. Man, I have a great spot. I love Fanatics.
Yeah, you guys produce a ton of video.
Everything.
Like jujitsu, wrestling, judo. It's amazing.
We're starting to get into basketball, weirdly.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. We found some like NBA player who's like showing us like how to like dunk and shit. It seems cool, man. You know, the company,
cool.
The things that we're talking about, you know, in terms of our growth and our benchmarks and what we're looking at in the next like 5 years is crazy exciting. Bernardo is so fucking smart. He really is. And I assume swearing and everything.
Yeah,
is
that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, Bernardo, you know, he's a 5-time world champion. He's this, he's that. He's one of the, like, one of 12 guys to ever win the absolute class, right, at Worlds. He's an elite competitor status, but he is the, like, data nerd at the company. He's the one always, you know, finding new marketing tools. That's what he cares about now. If you come to him and try to show him, like, hey, here's this new lapel guard, or here's, you know, this jiu-jitsu thing, he's like, oh, yeah, that's cool, but, like, if you come to him with, like, some marketing data, then he, like, sits down and starts parsing. He is really, really impressive as a guy.
Hmm. I guess somebody needs to be that in the business role.
Yeah, it's a good trade-off him and Zanga have. Zanga is, he started with a little bit more of the seed money, I would say, and he's more of managing the capital and managing the deals and a lot of the relationships. Like, if there's an important business dinner, you want Michael there because he's kind of the X's and O's, here's what we're going to offer, here's what we need from you kind of guy. He's more of the businessman.
I would see him when I was training with Jimmy Pedro and Travis Stevens. I would see Mr. Zenga come in there a couple times a week at night and train.
Never
jiu-jitsu.
During the warm-ups, I bet. Yeah, man, Michael's a double black belt. He's a black belt in judo and jiu-jitsu.
No kidding.
Yeah, he trains out of Travis's. He calls it Travis's. It's the Pedro Regional Training Center.
They share the same
Boston.
Gym, yeah. But yeah, they're separate.
Yeah, whatever the entities are. He is a black belt under BTT, and now he's training at Travis's, and he's really good. He's really good. He competed at Master Worlds last year as a black belt, and you know, I think he went 1-1. Gordon Ryan unfriended him because of it.
Oh, man.
No, funny story. So Michael jokes around, and he has a good time. He's a very smart guy, and but he's playing around. You know,
he's
having
cool,
a good
man.
Time.
Very yeah. down to earth.
So. After, and he's really good friends with Gordon. So after Masters Worlds, where he said he was going to win, he thought he could win. Man, he had a great performance. You know, he lost a really close second match. It happens. It's the world level.
I think I saw that match.
Master World Champion right here, by the way. So he, Gordon afterwards goes on and as a joke, like, unfriends him. So a couple months later, it's right before ADCC. It's like the weekend before ADCC. Michael puts up this, like, screenshot of this YouTube thing where he's uploaded Gordon's passing DVD, instructional series. We don't make DVDs, instructional series. He puts up his whole instructional thing on YouTube and he says, if Gordon doesn't win double gold, I'm gonna put this out for free. Clearly a joke, right?
Right,
we're not gonna fucking release Gordon's thing for free,
right,
obviously.
Right.
Jiu-Jitsu Times picks it up and starts running with it as like this, like, BJJ Fanatics founder says if Gordon doesn't win, his whole DVD series for free. We had to like call him up and tell him to knock it off. But yeah, sometimes the joking can be, man, just some people don't get sarcasm online, right?
Right.
It's very, but there's a funny Fanatics story for you. Yeah, I was there because the person who owns Jiu-Jitsu Times is Kit Dale. And so I'm listening to Michael on the phone yelling at Kit Dale.
Come on, that was a joke. You need to take it down, that kind of thing.
No, dude, I've seen you in like a lot of the Wrestling Fanatics videos.
Yeah,
like
I'm the fanatic partner, guy. Man. Yeah.
Yeah, what's that like, you know?
That's cool. So, yeah, the first time I was working with Fanatics, I was working on the jiu-jitsu side. They kind of sent an email just saying, we need somebody to help us with stuff. I emailed back in saying I can do it. And we went from there. And they brought me up for the first time to work with somebody. And it ended up being, this is kind of how it ended up in a full-time gig. They needed somebody who knew something about wrestling. I happen to watch wrestling every day. I'm an enormous fan of wrestling.
Yeah,
like, I wrestled, all the way. We can talk a little bit about my wrestling background, but up through the Division I level, like, I got thrown around at the D1 level, but, like, I wasn't, you know, we can talk about it. But, yeah, I've been a lifelong fan of wrestling, and the guy that I was going to be a partner with that day when they brought me up to, like, kind of meet me and get to know me better, happened to be that a guy that I wrestled with in college, Hudson Taylor, yeah, who competed at ADCC this year. Amazing guy, one of the best guys I know. Hudson is a three-time All-American wrestler. He's top 10 ever NCAA for pins, which is crazy to do these days because they used to have like 600 matches. You know what I mean? So it was, you know, if you picked up like 100 pins, it was like, you know, okay, cool. But like nowadays, to do it in the era that he did it in, he had to be just pinning everybody that he came across. He was a really cool guy. He got the ACC Wrestler of the Year award the same day he got inducted into the Society of American Magicians. Weird, right?
That's pretty cool.
Hudson's a weird guy. but it just so happened, like, okay, I come up and I'm working with somebody I know, and I'm working, you know, they're asking me like all these wrestling questions that I know all the answers to. So that's how I kind of got my full-time gig. And so, yeah, anytime that they need something to happen with wrestling, I'm the guy. If they have a wrestler coming in, they want me there because I can kind of translate back and forth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's awesome.
IBJJF. Oh, that means like UWW. Or, you know, they'll ask me, you know, the wrestler will talk about, you know, some kind of something, getting hooks, and I'll be, you know, come over to the guy. That means a lot, you know, riding legs, that kind of thing. I can kind of translate back and forth. And apparently nobody in Boston owns a pair of fucking wrestling shoes. Yeah, every time they're like, yeah, we just, you know, I'll be like, oh, well, you know, what if I don't come in this time? They're like, well, then we can't shoot with the guy. We can't find somebody else that knows how to wrestle to be in the video with him. So, yeah, I've been thrown around plenty. I got thrown around by Ed Ruth. Hudson's an example. Man, I got thrown around by a guy named Nick Heflin, who's like the best American freestyle thrower. Man, that dude planted me. Hit Them With The Earth by Nick Heflin, now on fanaticwrestling.com.
Awesome.
But I schedule a lot of the guys. Like, I'll go out and I'll get some of the guys that we'll go work with. And it's a fucking dream job, man. I just hit up these, like, amazing wrestlers. Like, hey, man, do you want some money? And then it's like, they're my friend. It's like being a rich kid in, like, a bad Richard Pryor movie.
Yeah, because you're doing what you love and
what you do. It's like, yeah, it's unbelievable. These guys that I've been a huge fan of for years, now I just go out and I meet them and I train with them sometimes. Yeah. And, like, you know, I have, like, a guy like Jordan Oliver's in my phone and we're talking about training together. If you told me this 2 years ago, I would have thought, you know, I was dying. Legitimately, my life is so much better than it was, like, 2 or 3 years ago. And it's just from, like, being so stubborn about just doing the things that I feel a strong attraction to. You know what I mean? I feel like for a long time I was making with like jobs that I would take, I was really compromising. And now I just feel like there's no compromises in my life. I have to live very simply. I can't have a lot, but everything I have, I love.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's the dream, man.
It's really cool.
That's
awesome. Yeah. I'm waiting for a girl that comes around and appreciates this simplicity level.
Right.
But until then, I'll figure the rest out.
It'll come.
It'll come.
So out of all the people you've been around, like jiu-jitsu, wrestling, is there anyone that stands out to you as just like a phenomenal, like gifted teacher?
Oh, man. Somebody that I should mention that I'll mention a couple of guys. One, Gordon is fucking smart. Gordon Ryan really knows his stuff when it comes to jiu-jitsu. And I got to, you know, be around Donaher, but obviously that's a simple, you know, anybody can tell you Donaher knows his stuff.
Yeah.
The best no-gi technician in the world is Craig Jones, I believe. That's not to say that Gordon's technique isn't also up there, because clearly, like, Gordon beats them when they fight. But I think that a lot of that is, in part, athleticism. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think that technique for technique, and when it comes to instructing, I think Craig Jones, who I got the chance to spend a weekend around, was so sharp. And I think his game is so good. And the way that he was describing things and the way he was able to break down some positions for me, I thought that was really something. Wrestler that I can name that sees things totally differently. Hudson's a great example, but I'll name somebody else. Jordan Oliver. He wrestled for Oklahoma State. He was a Pennsylvania State champion. He was all this, all that. And he's probably the best American to never wrestle at the World Championships. And man, his technique is amazing. It's kind of ironic. He kind of wrestles like a foreigner, whereas the American style is super aggressive, get in your face, push you around. It's a very like Matt Hughes style of wrestler. Mm-hmm. Jordan's not like that. Jordan's a lot more like, if you see an MMA, like how Yoel Romero is very like serpentine with his movements, yeah, and yeah. harder to pin down at one point. But then when the time comes, he strikes, kind of like a snake. Man, Jordan, his understanding of technique was incredible. And the way he was, this is always a cool thing. Whenever you can see somebody mimic somebody else, you know that they really know technique, in my opinion. They really can see the things. And he was like, oh man, when it comes to like Sitikov, this is the way Sitikov moves and these are the attacks. And I started watching him move. It was like, it's kind of like an impression. Like you hear somebody do an impression and maybe it's not perfect, but it's like, yeah, that is it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's the same way with watching. He was like doing impressions of guys wrestling and it was really interesting. I went down there in North Carolina to work with him and another guy, and Jordan really blew my mind.
Awesome, man. Yeah. I'll have to look those guys up, man. I just wrote them down. So what's next for the Fanatics team? I know you mentioned basketball. Is there anything else, like MMA or anything like that?
We're working on MMA. We have some cool striking things coming out. I flew out to L.A. to work with I can probably talk about this, to work with Master Rafael Cordero, who was like the shoot-the-box striking coach for a long time. We're talking Vanderlei, Anderson Silva, the Shogun brothers, you know. Name a good striker out of Brazil, and he's probably had some hand in them. And we worked with him, and he was another guy who was actually able to kind of mimic the way other guys were going. So he is, I think he's the best Muay Thai coach in the world. He's the best MMA Muay Thai coach ever, in my opinion. And that's something we have coming up, and more boxing instructionals and things like that will be coming. I just worked with some Cuban boxing coaches. That was real cool. But when it comes to what's next, that's a great question. Here's something we're working on that's exciting. These tournaments that we're putting out. We did a brown belt, color belt kind of thing. Just
like
not
a live stream, right?
Yeah, we live streamed it.
Awesome.
The next thing that we're going to do, there's going to be some changes. But this one, the biggest change is that it's a black belt tournament. And we're getting into more and more of these tournaments, in part just so we can kind of have the footage. You know what I mean? So we can then break it down later. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because people,
yeah.
You know, it's a really cool thing. If you could watch Gordon Ryan go through a tournament and then just listen to Gordon explain every match that he won, or anybody
like
that's going to be in the tournament,
something.
Like a voiceover
awesome.
Thing, like here's what I was doing. But man, let's say somebody else wins. Let's say Hulk Barboza. That's a super tough guy. Hulk Barboza is, you know, almost beat Gordon at ADCC. Gordon had to pull out some semifinal magic there. Have him go through, and here's what I was doing, and here's
right,
what I
right.
was thinking. Man, have both guys that are in the finals
dude, that'd be awesome.
Talk their way in it, and then they can just commentate over what happened in the finals.
Yeah, that's
one
cool.
guy will have to swallow his pride because he has to explain what happened when he lost.
Right.
But like, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not going great, and it's not going great, and I tap out.
Cool, man. So
that's something that's coming up. That's really exciting. And we're going to do the same thing, I hope, with wrestling. You know, do like a wrestling tournament and just... It'll be difficult to, because a lot of guys don't want to compete in tournaments that... Wrestling is not set up for money in the same way that jiu-jitsu is. Whereas
right.
a jiu-jitsu guy, they have their world championships and all this. But the rest of the time, they're trying to win money and win money tournaments. Wrestling, they're really most of the time trying to qualify themselves for the world championships and then win once they qualify. And so if I were to hold a tournament and say, okay, the winner gets 10 grand... Man, we'll get good guys. You know, we'll get people who show up who definitely know what they're doing. They have pedigrees. They have, you know, results.
My apologies. We just got cut out because of a phone call. My phone got that went to my iPad. And since we were in the library and we were on Wi-Fi, the call came through and disrupted our audio. So my apologies. Back to the show.
And so, yeah, I'd say that was the secret to jiu-jitsu.
Awesome.
Now you guys missed like 3 seconds of us playing around.
Yeah, so that is really creative because I've never heard anybody like, usually the commentators are on the outside, you know, talking
about what's
going on.
Commentators suck.
Yeah, so to get inside somebody's head who's actually in the action, like that's awesome.
It'd be really good, right? I would be very, so yeah, we're doing some cool stuff with the black belt tournaments and everything that's going on. Like I was saying about the wrestling, you know, if we were to hold a wrestling tournament, we wouldn't get the top guys the first time. But you know what would happen? Somebody would win it, and there would be a lot of people sitting around saying, oh, I bet I could beat that guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that could have been my money if I entered. Why not me? And so hopefully we can set something up cool like that. And it's literally just because we enjoy doing it. Here's a fanatic story. I was on the mat one time, and I was doing the morning class at the Yamasaki Academy. We're both members. And I have my phone off to the side. I was still a little new to the job. So it was kind of like, it's kind of like being a new parent, right? Like everything, you know, if the baby even blinks, you like go and check it's okay. By the third kid, like, you know, they can fall off the roof. You know, they'll bounce. They'll get back to it. I was kind of still in that new phase where, you know, my phone went off. My boss called me. I immediately, you know, said, oh my God, I'm training. I'm so sorry. I left the mat. I took the call. And I was like, you know, I'm sorry. What's up? You know, I'm sorry. I almost missed your call. You know, is it something urgent? And it was Michael, and Michael tells me, we make jiu-jitsu DVDs. Nothing's urgent. Go back to your workout. I don't care.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, and he just had me call him later. Yeah, it's a really, really, really chill company.
Like yeah, that. Yeah. Never had a boss do that in my life.
I know, me either. So as we move forward, it's more just about like, yeah, just what do we want to do? You know, I had, you know, we were talking recently, and I reminded Michael about, let's not just do stuff to do stuff. Let's do stuff because it's cool, right? You know,
yeah.
Like the guys that we're going to work with. Let's just work with the guys that we want to work with. You know, even if there's a big name in jiu-jitsu, if he seems like a jerk, if he has a bad... Here's a guy we're not going to work with. We're not going to be working with AJ Agazar. I hope I'm not, like, breaking company policy, but I would be surprised to see a guy like that who has, a bad taste in the community rise to the top of our must-work list. Right. But somebody like... who's somebody we haven't worked with? Andre Galvao. Everybody has nice things to say about Andre Galvao, right? Except for the dope grappling posts. But everybody else has very nice things to say about Andre Galvao. He's the nicest guy. Man, we would love to work with a guy like that, you know? And hopefully we figure out something in the future. So it's a very cool company in that we kind of get to go where we choose.
And something you said about a tournament.
I go where I'm told.
Right.
Michael and Bernardo go where they choose.
Right. So for something for wrestling, you said... There's like cash prizes to win tournaments?
In the future, there could be. As an example of an idea.
That would be an awesome evolution because that's not a thing.
I know.
You know? And that would be...
It exists in some international tournaments. Like I remember a guy, Jimmy Kennedy, who actually maybe I should work with. We should hit up Jimmy. Jimmy won a tournament in like Poland where he won a car. But he couldn't get the car home, so he just had to sell it in Poland.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So they exist in these weird formats, but it's like, man, money on the table. Who wants it? You know?
Yeah. So if you're Olympic bound, you can't make money, right?
That's no, you can. Thankfully, yeah. A guy like Jordan Burroughs has money. He has made himself a very nice lifestyle in wrestling. The only guys we can't touch are the guys with college eligibility.
Oh, gotcha.
Those are the guys that can't make money. But it's the same reason that like LeBron is an Olympian. You know what I mean? That was an amateurism doctrine that got lifted in the 90s, like 1990, around there, something in there. That's why we ended up, the first year they dropped it was the first year we ended up having the Dream Team. And that's why that was like such a big deal, because before then it was all college kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. So
that was always our big disadvantage. That's why we had the Miracle on Ice, because we had a bunch of college kids that, you know, those were our best players that weren't professionally tainted, you know, by a lack of amateurism. But they were facing off against these Soviets who were government employees or like soldiers, but they were basically professionals. So we were faced with this giant, you know, disservice. But yeah, we could go offer it to any number of international guys, that kind of money. It would be cool.
I heard Joe Rogan and Lex Friedman talking about a Russian wrestler. Lex Friedman's Russian, so he's like an MIT artificial intelligence guy, but black belt in judo and I think jiu-jitsu too. But he was saying that a wrestler to look out for in Russia is called the tank.
Oh, are they talking about Sagileyev? I mean, he's the number one pound-for-pound guy, so to watch out for him is... Yeah, he's incredible. I've seen him lose one match ever. You know, he's... So I'll give you the lore, and then I'll kind of give you what really happens. Abdulrashid Sagileyev from Russia. He is Dagestani, of course. And he won a cadet world championship at the age of 16. Cadets is 17 and under. He then jumped directly past the junior level, which is like under 20. He jumped directly to the senior level in 2015, and he won a senior world championship, demolished everybody. In the finals, he faced a Cuban guy named Salas Perez, and the initial scramble, Sagileyev scored 5 points. If he scored 10, they stopped the match. If you are leading by 10 points, they stopped the match. Initial scramble, they first get their hands on each other, 5-0. Salas Perez comes back, slaps the shit out of Sagileyev. Sagileyev scores another 5 points and they end the match. Like 40 seconds in. Unbelievable. 2016 kills everybody on his way to an Olympic championship at like 18 or 19 years old. Here's the thing. He's not really 18 or 19 years old at this point. He's probably in his early 20s, 21, 22. But the Russians will lie about their ages to get their guys into these under 17, under 20 world championships. You know what I mean? It's kind of the, you know. All you need for those is not to be that age. All you need is a birth certificate saying you're that age. And for the Russians, that's not a big deal, you know, problem to get. He goes on, and in 2017, he has a legendary match. The last match of the tournament at the 2017 World Championships was Kyle Snyder, who was also an Olympic champion.
Yeah, he's
facing,
awesome.
Amazing. Facing Sagileyev. And Kyle won in the last 30 seconds, and Sagileyev was just too tired. Kind of broke, you know. The last 5 seconds, he just put his hands on his knees and stopped trying to score. And because of that match, Team USA just barely jumped over Russia to win the world championship as a team.
Wow.
So it came down to this last match, all the marbles, world championships, who's going to get it, right? Since then, he's won 2 more world championships, and Kyle hasn't been back. He's absolutely unbelievable. He's on pace to be one of the best of all time. I've only ever seen him lose that one match to Kyle Snyder, which is one of the most legendary matches of all time at this point in wrestling. Sagileyev is a freak. He is up there with any name you want to give. Karelin, you know, Batirov, name it, Burroughs, whoever, John Smith, he's up there.
Yeah, that's what Lex was saying. I love talking to you about this because you're legitimately like a walking encyclopedia.
I know a lot
of information.
I won some money off Chael Sonnen in a trivia contest. Oh, yeah, we were going back and forth.
Okay, so what is what can BJJ and wrestling learn from each other since you're in both worlds?
Okay, good question. One, BJJ can learn from wrestling a lot more of that work ethic and mindset towards just professionalism. I see college kids in wrestling who aren't getting paid a dime acting so much more professionally with us.
Wow, great point.
Than world champion jiu-jitsu athletes. When it comes to being able to speak to large groups, when it comes to being on time for shit, sorry. When it comes to you know, being easy to work with in terms of like even just little things like not demanding cash from us, you know, kind of working within those kind of systems. And some of it is cultural, but I feel like jiu-jitsu athletes in general, it can just be a little like surfer guys. Whereas every time we deal with a wrestler, it's like dealing with a businessman. And it's a lot more refreshing.
And something my wrestling coach always said was he always thought that wrestling was the purest sport because
it's the people sport.
There's no glory, real glory. I mean, yeah, if you dominate everybody and you win, it's like a small group of people are going to look up to you.
Could walk down the street right now. Nobody's going to stop
him. Most people would not, you know. But, I mean, they don't get in it because there's of money, because there's not much there. You know, like, you can get into jiu-jitsu, get a black belt, open your own gym. There's a lifestyle for that, like a living. Unless you get to a high level, it's hard to do that in wrestling. You know, to open your own gym and really have that as your sole, you know, income.
I agree.
So that's interesting. That's like a real character refinement difference, you know. To be great at wrestling, it's a lot more humbling because that, you know, what motivates a lot of people isn't there for wrestlers. Money, I mean.
It's weird the difference between jiu-jitsu and wrestling. Jiu-jitsu, I feel like there's always a focus on lifting and getting bigger. You know what I mean? I feel like unless you're like a meow, unless you're in the like really small weight classes, I feel like guys are always trying to go up in weight. And a lot of that is just the lack of drug testing, obviously. But in wrestling, there's so much more of a focus, like get to the lowest that you can kind of comfortably make. And I don't know who has it right and I don't know who has it wrong, but I feel like the wrestling need to constantly be disciplined in your diet, like those guys cannot live like a jiu-jitsu guy.
Right.
They never could. There's no way.
Super disciplined, man.
All the time. All the time. With it's a lifestyle on lifestyle battle, way more than with jiu-jitsu. I feel like you just get away with a lot more with your lifestyle. There's a lot more flex. It's kind of because everybody is doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm not even talking about steroids or anything. I'm just talking about a lot of jiu-jitsu athletes aren't getting the proper sleep. A lot of jiu-jitsu athletes really aren't getting the nutrition that like a high-level athlete in another sport might be. I think a great example is judo. Judo, I think a lot of those guys do it right at the highest level.
Right.
The level of athleticism in judo is unbelievable. Yeah, the level of athleticism in BJJ really isn't as high as it is in wrestling. Those wrestlers, when they come over, it is different, right?
Yeah, for sure. You can get away with not being in top shape in jiu-jitsu and still win because it's a much slower paced kind of, with the gi, at least.
Yeah.
You know, maybe no gi is a little different, but wrestling, to perform at the highest level, you have to be in top physical performance shape. Like you said, rest, nutrition, diet, conditioning.
Man, if you don't have any of those things, if you don't have one of those things right, you're going to get run off the mats at a high level. You know, you really are.
For sure.
And something that I think that wrestling needs to pick up from jiu-jitsu is the funness of it and the inclusivity of it.
Yeah.
Anyone can wrestle. That is true. Anyone is welcome to come to a wrestling class, try it, do their best. But something that wrestling has to stop doing is it has to stop running everybody out of town. Wrestling loves to make itself as difficult as possible, and whoever shows up, then they can have the pride of, I'm a bad motherfucker, I've earned this, I've done things that other people weren't willing to do. But then you lose a lot of people who I think help the sport so much.
Right.
You look at a gym like ours, the competitive class is pretty small, you know, in terms of guys, you know, people who could really push on that level. And, you know, it's plenty of people. It's guys like me and you, but it's also guys like, I don't know, I'll throw like an Oliver, you know, as a good example about like maybe he doesn't compete all the time, but if we were to really go, he could go. But there's a lot of people in that school who are showing up and learning and trying their best. And in wrestling, you're not really given that kind of time. You really have to kind of hit the ground running, at least with a work ethic. You're not allowed to kind of grow and discover and just enjoy for any period of time. And I think that wrestling, if it was able to kind of build some bifurcation where you have the bad motherfuckers who are going over here and chasing their dreams and pushing their goals as much as possible, like it is now, this the avenue that it is now, but then kind of an underclass of just like guys showing up enjoying it, you know, I think that would go a long way to helping grow the sport, because I was that for a long time. I showed up and I just loved the sport, but I was horrible for a long time, or I was, you know, at least very mediocre. And it took me a long time to figure out how to actually wrestle in terms of getting in there and scoring takedowns and scoring points. And now I give back to wrestling I pay wrestlers. And I think that if you only demand the baddest motherfuckers, then that's what you're going to get. But you're going to leave a lot of people who really would enjoy it along the way.
Yeah, and something Sensei Jimmy Pedro said, in judo, what they can learn from jiu-jitsu is like the whole lifestyle aspect. It's like a culture.
Yes.
You know, it's fun. They do things together. It's a community. Like, you know, wrestling, it kind of competition-wise drops off around college or after college.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and what real community are we creating? And like, if it's all about competition, it's going to be a very small, you know, group of people. It's not like you said, it's like enjoying it for the fun of it. You know, it's hard for me to find a gym where people are enjoying flow wrestling and not just like trying to kill each other. So is it a sport?
Many people don't enjoy flow wrestling, as I've learned in my travels with actual wrestlers.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So is it
competition versus just lifestyle and like functional body awareness or movement? Is that something that could be changed or altered or influenced? Because it is a sport, it's based around medals and trophies, and so what would need to change?
That's definitely something that early on I had to point out to the Fanatics guys. The difference in wrestling and jiu-jitsu is that everyone who wrestles is wrestling to compete.
Right.
You do not train wrestling if you are not going to compete in wrestling, or at least it's incredibly rare. And in jiu-jitsu, I mean, how many guys do we know that never compete?
A lot of them.
Most, I would say, yeah. You know, or maybe they'll compete, you know, once or twice to give it a shot. But man, it sucks to compete, you know? And I say that as somebody who, I love to compete. I compete all the time. I'll compete. My goal with competition is go until the tires fall off. You know, if I'm Masters 5 and my left arm isn't really working lately, but, you know, I still have the right one a little bit, you know, okay. Then I can shake hands with the right one and we can fight. I feel like that should be everybody's goal. You know, you go and you put yourself out there, and, you know, if you don't have a big ego, then, okay, you lost today. Great. You know, that's what competition is. But, man, it sucks to compete, right? It sucks to make the weight. It sucks to, you know, be nervous the week of, and my brackets are out. Should I look at my bracket, or should I just show up and, you know, whatever happens, happens? You know, I've done this tournament before. I haven't won it yet. Or I did win this tournament the last time, so I really need to win it this time. You know, is my coach going to be there, or, you know, is he not going to be there? What am I going to tell him later about how it went, that kind of stuff? Man, there's a lot of stress that goes to competing. Mm-hmm. There's so much stress that goes to competing. Nobody likes it. I bring it up at tournaments sometimes. I'll just start talking to other guys, and I'll just start, I'll bring this level of honesty about, like, man, today sucked for everybody, right? Like, we were in the finals, and it sucked. Think about, like, and, you know, they laugh because they know that it's true. You know, there's no special secret sauce to any of this. It's, you know, we're both going to go out to the deep water, and whoever can doggy paddle a little better is going to win.
So why do you compete?
Man, I feel like I'm supposed to. I think that's a big part of it. I do enjoy the rush, right? There's no way to go out there and not feel a rush. And if you keep showing up, it's because you enjoy the rush. There can be a whole list of reasons beyond that. But you like going out there, and your blood picks up a little bit, and your heart goes, no matter how calm you want to pretend you're being. There's something. You're fighting a guy. Beyond that, I feel like it does sharpen me in my lifestyle. I feel like I do have to be a much more disciplined person because I have something like that coming up.
For sure.
Up. Like, man, you know, I just, you know, since we got back from Uruguay, you know, I haven't been as disciplined in my diet. But then suddenly, you know, yesterday I was thinking about it, and I have the New York Open coming up, and I want to make sure that I'm at middleweight, and I actually have a chance to drop all the way to lightweight. And so I need to start eating healthy, and so I started making these plans about what I was going to eat. Man, I would never do that if I wasn't competing. I would just sort of walk around and do whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if my jiu-jitsu got better, that was cool. But at this point, I've been competing long enough that it's a habit, and it's a lifestyle, and it's what I use to help enforce all these mechanisms of the things I love about jiu-jitsu and the things that jiu-jitsu gives me. Everything that jiu-jitsu gives me is brought out in competition. So I need to keep going and competing to keep getting the most out of the sport that I love.
Definitely. Like, I feel that too. I'm 100% transparent when I'm out on the mat. You know, I see my weaknesses a lot easier. Like, everything's more intense. So, you know, that person is trying to beat you with everything they have. So it's not flow rolling.
No,
you know?
You're going. And it feels nice to win. You know, you go out there, you choke a guy, you get to somebody's back, and you know, you slip in a choke and they tap on you. Man, that's an awesome feeling. It feels good to wrestle with people. You know, if you ever want to sell somebody on jiu-jitsu or wrestling, guys, it's literally just fun. It's a fun thing to do. Our brains recognize it as an enjoyable activity. You look at little, you know, two little boys playing around, they're going to start wrestling with each other. You look at every culture in the world has some form of wrestling. Why? Because our bodies recognize it as fun. There's that kind of tactile sensation of pushing and moving around. And now you're learning it with a more systematic approach, and you're learning it with some bumpers around about you should try to do this instead of doing this. Suddenly it's this fun thing that's starting to make more sense. It's this fun thing that's starting to bring a little bit more architecture around it. Never mind the culture that it builds around it.
And it's cool. Man, you got... there's a fucking black belt in Baltimore. I've broken his leg twice. That's an ego rush. You want to talk about ego rush? That's an ego rush. You know what I mean? It feels nice to go out there and do that kind of thing. And I think that sometimes, you know, we overlook and we try to find the highest answer possible. Sometimes it's the lowest, right? It's like jiu-jitsu. Yeah, sometimes what's the way to pass the guard? Throw the legs to the side. Still works sometimes.
So now you mentioned Uruguay. Like, we both just competed in Uruguay. What brought you out there?
Fernando telling me that I had to. Man, I forgot about it until... we both competed for the JJIF in Uruguay. It was really cool. It was my first time traveling out of the country. I didn't even have a passport leading up to that. I had to get one, and I actually had to rush one, and it came like we left on like a Monday or a Tuesday, and I got it like Friday. Like, it really was getting pretty close. But I have told Fernando for a long time. Actually, funny enough, tomorrow is my 7-year anniversary in jiu-jitsu, and the first thing I ever told Fernando Yamasaki when I first showed up, October 29th, 2012, can you make me a champion? And he said, of course, get on the mat. I said, okay. And I ended up signing the paperwork and all that after class. He's always kind of, he's guided me, he's pushed me forward. I've competed at the Pan Ams and I've done well. I've competed at Nogi Pans and I've done well. The World Championships, I've done well. I've had good performances in a lot of different places, but I haven't picked up the medal. You know what I mean? I haven't been on the podium, which is very frustrating. But it's part of it, and it's part of, you know, whatever my journey ends up being, it is. I'm not going to stop just because I've had some difficulty. And he told me, JJIF, this means a lot. I know you don't know about it, but it's going to be important. Trust me. And I did. I put a lot of trust in him because I was paying a lot of money to go down there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite know what to expect in terms of the level, but a lot of those guys turned out were really good. And I had some really
tough as shit, man.
They were tough. Those were tough dudes. But it ended up being a good day, man. I ended up with a gold medal in the jiu-jitsu.
I was just about to say, congratulations,
man. Within 7 years, it took me almost 7 years to do it, but first thing I ever said, Fernando, can you make me a champion? He turned around and he made me a champion.
So you got, you did a lot of work on your own, too.
I did.
In addition to that.
In addition, I study an unreasonable amount of jiu-jitsu. So I have access to all of the BJJ Fanatics library. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like this like Templeton the Rat running around all the time, just like grabbing this, always trying to pick up as much technique as possible because I enjoy it. I you know, I'm like a hoarder. I want to learn everything. Man, you know, I was once told you can never learn all of jiu-jitsu. I take that as a challenge.
Right.
Because, you know, you've seen me. I'm always, you know, working on something new or trying to invent.
Yeah, you're one of my go-to people if I have a question, man.
Yeah, there's some question, sure. Something. I'd be happy to talk about it. It's been I'm somebody who puts a big emphasis on always taking time to figure out new things.
And just to give everybody at home some perspective, we competed in two different events. One was Nawaza, which is basically the same as jiu-jitsu and IBJJF. And then there was another one that was like combat jiu-jitsu where he actually did some striking.
It was like sambo. That's what I've been telling people.
Yeah.
Very sambo-like. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like point sparring. And then when you grab a hold of somebody, you stop the strikes. Then it's throws and takedowns. Then it's pinning and submissions. But Joe got gold in the jiu-jitsu, Nawaza, and then silver in the actual combat-like jiu-jitsu. And, you know...
Which we were learning the rules to in the middle of the tournament.
Yeah, the day of.
Not. I wish it was the day of. I wish it was before it started. But you remember after your first fight, you scored like 6 single-leg takedowns. And it was like, Chris should have gotten points for these. And then it was like, oh, no, you need to land them on their back. I was like, oh, that's way harder.
Yeah.
That's a way harder thing to do.
So to win in the fighting style of jiu-jitsu, you had to have an ippon in 3 different categories. One was a strike, a clean strike in and out. So that would be your ippon for the striking. Then you had to have a clean throw or takedown, which we later understood that a takedown was to drop someone on their back, just like a throw for judo. And that would be a clean ippon for that category of the event. And then you had to have a pin or a submission,
which is your third Ippon. You need all three to actually end the match and win. And we were figuring out how that actually had to happen as we were doing it. So
don't ask me to make sense of it. You know what I mean? Because like it was weird. You know, it's the first fight I've ever been in where a submission doesn't end the fight. You know what I mean? And that really, that messed with me in a really like weird way where I couldn't just think, no matter what happens, as bad as it can get, if you can get to the back and choke him, you're going to win the fight, right? Man, that wasn't true here. Yeah. The Mexican guy I fought in the finals wanted no part of jiu-jitsu with me.
Right.
Yeah, because you think that, and like we were trying to think of strategy in the middle of it because we didn't know what was going on. It kind of got sprung on us. And so we were like, okay, we'll strike, but eventually they have to grapple with us, and that'll be good for us. Man, a bunch of guys just ran out of bounds from us.
They were smart, man. They played that line because they knew.
Our jiu-jitsu was way better than theirs. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. A lot of the guy I fought in the finals, though, was a brown belt, but he was not on my level.
Yeah, so people at home know, like this, like in different from IBJJF, like the belt level, there was none. There's like brown and black belts in our division. I'm a blue belt. Joe's a purple belt, and we're fighting black belts.
I beat
belts,
a bunch of black belts.
Yeah, you won.
Yeah.
So I got third, but I mean, the guy who got second in my category was like, yeah, I'm a black belt in judo, brown belt in jiu-jitsu. I was like, yeah, that's why I had a hard time taking you down, because you were tough, man. But so 18 and older, no belt. So it's different than IBJJF in the sense where it's like a larger group of people that can compete at your weight class, which is like the only differentiation. Which is kind of awesome. The level is higher,
I think. The level is super high, yeah. And it was brown and black belt rules, a lot of leg locks. The first guy I fought was a black belt. The guy I fought in the finals was a double brown belt, I'm pretty sure. And the guy I fought in the semifinals was also a black belt. And I tapped all of them within 5 minutes combined.
Which is amazing.
No, I didn't tap the last guy. The last guy, we can talk about what happened there. So I was facing, we were in Uruguay. We were facing home country Uruguay. And actually, right before the fight, do you remember they did that procession with all the flags and stuff?
Yeah,
they did like a parade of countries. So in that parade of countries, they also did a very nice moment of silence for our deceased friend, Ron.
Yeah.
And then within like 3 minutes, my fight was up. And so it was like, guys, come on. I really felt like they were kind of messing with me. You know what I mean? But the Uruguay were very cool. So I'm facing this guy. He's been looking really good all day. I've been crushing all day. We're hitting in the finals. Everybody stops to watch this match, I felt like. Because, you know, it was just a lot of action all day. And so we get to the finals, and he's been pulling guard, so I'm expecting the guard pull. As he drops his level, I go to grab his leg, hoping to, like, maybe, like, catch the 2 points. You know what I mean? Sometimes you can, you know, time in. The ref might give it to you. But he wasn't pulling. He was dropping for my legs, too. So we collided heads. Then he pulls. And as he's pulling guard, I hop on this toe hold. We roll out of bounds. Ref, you know, stops us. We go back to the center. I go back to the center. I look back. He's in a fucking heap. His face is pouring blood because when we crashed heads, he got a giant cut over his head. And they ended up having to stop the fight for it like 30 seconds in. It was really... It kind of sucked, you know, to win my, like, big, you know, title, like, off of, like, a thing. But the way I think about it, I've had bad luck so many fucking times. And I've had so many refs. I've had refs decisions at Pans, at Worlds, at Nogi Pans, you know, all these enormous tournaments. I've had bad luck with my draws where I had to fight the eventual champion 1.9 times in a row at IBJJF events. I had... You know, bad calls go against me. Iffy calls go against me. I had bad luck in so many brackets. Man, I had good luck one time. You know what I mean? You know, at this time I didn't try to do it.
Right. It was unintentional.
It was totally unintentional. It was a total accident. It was a freak accident. But for once, if you know, the ball rolled in my direction.
Yeah, I actually gave the video. I recorded the video. I actually gave it to one of the Uruguay guys, and he brought it over to the team to show them that it was an unintentional thing. You know, so.
They were cool with it, right?
Yeah,
they generally
were cool.
Like thought like,
yeah, the guy.
How
like,
did they react? Can you tell me this?
They were like, the guy asked me for the video and I airdropped it to him.
Perfect.
And then he went back and like, you know, I walked by him and they were like, you know, very cool, very respectful.
Okay.
They knew
that's
it
good.
Wasn't intentional. You know, it's just like you went in for a shot, he dropped his level, and then...
Man, you can see it on the video, it was clear, you know, we both just, you know, went for the legs and just, you know, it is what it is.
So, what is, from your perspective, in comparison to IBJJF versus JJIF, like, what's the...
Oh, man. IBJJF, so for the first day, though, I feel like a well-run JJIF would be better. You know what I mean? The one that we saw... I don't think was the best representation. So JJIF, so a lot of people know, these are people that are involved in a lot of world games and other kind of organizations that are the level right before you get an Olympic berth as a sport.
Mm-hmm.
And we
that's why this is important, and that's why Professor Fernando Yamasaki wanted us to go to this.
I got drug tested, you know, an Olympic style drug test. Which I guess for it to be technically Olympic style would have to happen like year round. But it was, you know, the same people that do it. You know, there was athlete buses, there was free massages, which whipped, there was, they took a really, really strong, they took really strong care of the athletes.
Yeah, they had fruit and water for us, free, man.
It was amazing, yeah. Just anything we needed all weekend, they had ready to go. Mm-hmm. Problem was, the people who were setting up the bracketing software didn't bring a support person, so there's a problem with it when they were rolling it out. So it ended up just taking all day to get everything done.
Which doesn't happen often, but it's dependent on the country it's in that they set it up. So it might be different compared to where you're actually at. But, I mean, yeah, we even got taxi to the airport.
Oh, you know, man, like, yeah, for free.
Yeah,
yeah.
it was amazing.
Yeah, we thought they were like, okay, the athlete bus, what time do you guys need to go? And we were like, 2 o'clock, whatever it was, I forget. And they're like, all right, we'll be there at 2 o'clock with the bus. And it was just some guys like Miata. Like, it was just a car. Mm-hmm. That was weird, you know, and they were just hanging out. You remember, yeah, and then they he stopped right in front of this landmark. And he's like, hey, do you guys want to take one last photo in front of this landmark? And we were like, yeah, sure. Can we leave our stuff here? And he's like, yeah, no problem. And as we're walking up, I was thinking, like, do we know that guy works for the JJIF in any way? Or are we just leaving our stuff with, like, a guy who met us in the lobby?
And the other
he didn't rob us.
No. The other thing that was amazing to me was the community and the actual brotherhood that everybody really wants, I think, in jiu-jitsu.
Yes. And this was just so amazing. Different. Yeah. All the teams, like, after the last event of the last day, all the teams are on the mat taking photos together and getting to know each other. I don't know about you. I've gotten, like, 30,000 Facebook friend requests. Like, I got a ton of friend requests on Facebook. All these people reaching out, all these people, you know.
From all over South America,
getting phone numbers and saying, oh, we should keep in touch anytime you're at my gym, anytime you're at my gym. All this stuff. Yeah, I've never seen that level of camaraderie ever at an IBJJF tournament.
We actually took an entire tournament group picture.
Yeah, everybody who competed got together and took one photo.
Which is awesome. You know, so and then
it looked good for the Olympic dudes who were there. There was like there was some guys there in like these Olympic blazers who were kind of checking things out, and hopefully that looked pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And
our picture is gonna go up in the Uruguayan embassy.
That's
in,
right.
The American embassy in Uruguay.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. And
if you're ever there, shout.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the other things that made a difference, you know, IBJJF versus JJIF is something that Professor Fernando mentioned. He's like, I wanted you to experience this because there's a big difference between representing your club or your school versus your country. And I mean, that was like,
that was pretty
cool. A
whole
different level of, you know, pride.
I've never represented the country in anything.
Me neither. It was pretty cool, you know, and we were the only two there competing from America. And, you know,
I feel like we showed out too. We had a great tournament.
Yeah, we did.
We fucking we really stomped our foot down because apparently America usually sucks at these tournaments. Like I was the first Pan American champion that we've had in a long fucking time, and we've never had a world medalist. It just ended up being a great time.
Yeah, and one of the reasons we're sharing this with you and wanted to talk about it is because there's a world championship tournament in 2020 in America for this JJIF. So, you know, we're involved in this, and now we're looking for more people to be involved in this so we can actually have a strong representation, especially in our own country.
You guys have a chance to win a world championship. Please take it as seriously as you choose. The people who are going to take it really seriously don't need this message.
And on the long-term side of it, they're trying to make this an Olympic sport, like legit.
Which, by the way, the IBJJF is not. ADCC is not. Let's be honest. The closest people, it's either this or it's that bullshit UWW grappling that they do every year that they kind of hold like simultaneously with the Wrestling World Championships, but really nobody wants to do it. This is the Olympic style. If we're going to get anything, it will be this. And I think having jiu-jitsu in the Olympics, I've seen amazing things that it's done for other sports. I think you can do amazing things for this sport. So I think that you should take a serious look at the people who are approaching this the most seriously.
Definitely. And we're going to interview more people that have to do with that specifically, but they've been on the list for about 5 years, to my understanding, on the Olympic list. So this is a way that jiu-jitsu could actually be in the Olympics. So they can, there could
man,
be
that would be so cool, wouldn't it?
It'd be amazing.
And it's good rules. It's not dumbass rules. There's nothing in it's basically IBJJF rules with, you know, some key differences. But man, it's going to be good. If people can support, it's going to be good.
And the combat style of jiu-jitsu.
Call the number on your screen.
I actually would call it like a gentleman's MMA. Because it's the striking's toned down enough where you're not destroying each other, but you're still getting your licks in. But then once you grab, it turns into judo wrestling to get to the ground, jiu-jitsu. So it's like all these different elements that MMA has, but with a gi. So it's like gentleman's MMA with a gi, which is freaking cool.
If you look at how much amateur boxing has eventually helped professional boxing, and all of the high-level amateur boxers who are now high-level professionals, and how many world champions and number one pound-for-pound guys have some Olympic base, I think that can be true of MMA as well. I don't see any reason why not. And I think that it's something that MMA really lacks, is that kind of strong amateur base. For obvious reasons, it doesn't exist yet. This is a way it can start to build, and that we're not just going to get, you know, cast-offs from other sports, but where we can have real serious mixed martial artists that are starting to creep in now more and more, but I think a strong amateur base would really, really help that.
Definitely. And, you know, I was excited to be a part of that. So
hopefully we can look back in 20 years and, like, kind of not believe what we did. You know what I mean?
Right. So, yeah. So something else you mentioned, going back to a little more jiu-jitsu stuff, you mentioned the difference between modern BJJ and old school BJJ. Can you be creative and be old school?
Yes, absolutely. Because our gym has a very strong focus on being a little bit more old school, right? The Yamasaki Academy does not show a ton of new school stuff, but that doesn't mean you can't show new things. I think that new school BJJ and a lot of the BJJ that older guys get mad at, it isn't so much when somebody barambolos to the back, right? Or it isn't so much when somebody puts on, you know, some crazy, you know, squid worm guard, some kind of thing. What I think people get mad at is when you go backwards in your control. Does that make sense? So if I were in mount, but I were to step back to side control to try to do something, man, I'm moving backwards in my control. And I think that that's a bad thing. Or when guys double guard pull and nobody's willing to come up on top and advance their position, even though dominant position is being given to them. I think that really, I think you have to have that mindset. It's the mindset that let us fight in that combat thing. You know, is this all, you know, only end up in good positions kind of mindset that I think wrestling also helps you build. If there's an opportunity, you take your opportunity. So I think whatever advances your control from A to B without ever moving backwards is in the old school spirit. And so whatever you can do and still you know, achieve that, it be as creative as you want to be. I think there's a lot of people doing some really creative things. Here's a good creativity thing. So we saw from, I'll say, like 2013 to 2015, 2016, we saw a ton of, even up through 2017, we saw a strong phase where leg locks came back, right? And guys started applying, a lot of the Donaher guys, Craig Jones is an example, guys started applying all these crazy leg locks, right? And so what happens? Man, we need to learn how to counter this. We need to learn how to get out of it and how to counter it. Guys like Felipe Pena learned how to roll through and counter and come up to the back, and that's great. But what a lot of guys realized is if we stay low on the knees and pass from here, then we're going to be able to win. How do we do that in a no-gi scenario? The body lock. Mm. And so for a lot of people, that body lock, and we went over that in class on Friday, right?
Yep.
That body lock pass shuts down all those leg locks because it keeps the legs away. And so now we're seeing guys move to more of like a rolling under for almost like a deep half situation and then coming up through leg locks. So we're seeing an answer to an original problem that started just because, you know, a guy like John Donaher studied around a little too much with leg locks. He was creative with leg locks. And so I think there's definitely room for that creativity, and we're seeing it in real time. We're seeing evolution in real time. You just have to know how to watch what's happening with it.
Hmm. Well said. And so is the belt system overrated? And I mean, what does a belt to you in BJJ mean now that styles are becoming so different? Leg locks, you know, a black belt not knowing leg locks, for instance.
Like, sure, that's a great example. I think that the belt system needs to stick around, because I think it's important that people are not fast-tracked to black belt. I hate when that happens. I hate when I hear about like a four-year black belt. How can you be a four-year black belt, really? You know, maybe for competition, but man, you can't teach. You know, or there's going to be some serious gaps
here.
There's
a lot to learn.
There's a lot to learn in 4 years, and there's a lot of humility, and there's a lot of lifestyle that has to go along with that, where I feel like a lot of people can learn that by being held at a belt. I think that helped me, for example. Maybe I'm just rationalizing because it happened to me. Man, you know, I got my first two belts in jiu-jitsu. I was a purple belt from the time I started. It took me like 18 months. So, and if I kept going and if I kept earning belts that quickly and if I was a four-year black belt, man, I would be an asshole. You would not be able to live with me. And so I started seeing belts as more of a measure of your responsibility on the mat rather than your skill level or your knowledge base. It is how much are you able to help support where you're, you know, the mat that you're on, the school that you belong to, and how much can you, how much placement in the community do you have? Are you trusted to an inner circle level? I think that's kind of what a black belt is, where you've been trusted into someone's life at a very deep level.
Right.
And, you know, when you see another black belt, you know, maybe you don't know what his school, you know, teaches or how his level is, but you know this guy has achieved a certain level of trust. That's kind of more what I see. Because then when it comes to, like, techniques, man, I can find you a blue belt that'll fuck you up, you know, mm-hmm. if you want me to. I'll find you a white belt that'll fuck you up if you really want me to, mm-hmm. you know, for most of us. Technique for technique, you know, if I put anybody in a bad spot, it's not going to matter. You know, it's going to be a different thing. And when these new levels of athlete that I talked about with wrestling, when those kind of guys find their way into jiu-jitsu, when we really hit that Olympic level athlete kind of guy who is also an amazing technician, and we see them, certainly we have them, but when we start seeing them as consistently as we see in the sport like judo or a sport like wrestling, man, belts are going to get, you know, in terms of skill levels, belts are going to get forgotten quick. We're already seeing it. We had, you know, a 16-year-old blue belt place fourth at ADCC and another blue belt in the finals at 99-plus kilos.
Hmm.
So I think if you're
great
looking
point.
For black belt to mean technical master, it's not going to, right? You know, take a guy like Yegor, who I love, who's a guy at our gym. And he's a brown belt, very nice Russian man. But Yegor's, you know, 54 or 55. He only can do the positions that he does. You know, I'm never going to teach him to invert. You can only teach him certain positions, but when it comes to being able to, like, lead a warm-up or being able to help a new person or help any of this, he's a brown belt, and he's a brown belt because of his responsibility on the mat.
Yeah, I love flow rolling with him.
He's great, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good. Good leg locks, too. Yeah.
So what was it like? I know you mentioned ADCC. What was it like being mat side?
Man, I was mat side at ADCC. Yeah, for anybody who's in the BJJ Fanatics group, they will recognize me because I was providing a lot of live updates. This was just one of those cool things that I got to do through my job where they said, do you want to go? You know, we can try to meet with athletes about, you know, filming with them eventually. But also they just had a lot of guys at the tournament that they wanted to watch. And it's the biggest grappling event in the world. Why wouldn't you go? And they brought me and they brought one or two other guys, which was also a nice feeling. It let me know that, you know, I have, you know, a little bit of security with the company. They like hanging out with me, at least.
Definitely.
It's a very important thing at work, right?
Yeah, camaraderie.
And so, man, I was mat side. You can see me all over the Gary Tonnen versus Hanato Kanuto match, which is probably going to be the match of the year. But half the time you see me on my phone, if I could give my explanation for that, I'm updating live exactly what's happening. So I've had a lot of people giving me shit for that about, like, I am, like, 3 feet from the most exciting grappling match of the last couple of years, and I'm just on my phone, like, whatever, whatever, who cares? But to be that close, it's hard not to want to go and compete. You know what I mean? It's hard not to want to go do that, too. It's an inspiring feeling. You feel lifted up when you're that close to greatness. That's what I get out of it every time, at least. I imagine it could feel, like, almost like depressing, like, oh, I don't get that, but it's like, man, it's cool that, like, I'm getting to be this close to, like, something this big and important, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's weird seeing how different people deal with the wins and losses at ADCC, who takes it with some grace, who takes it really difficultly, which you completely understand both, right? Like, if somebody were to lose at ADCC, man, that is your business how you want to handle with that, you know, I don't discount anybody. Their difficulties. It's kind of what, I won't name names, obviously. But even the people who won, even people who won gold medals, it was interesting to see how they dealt with it. Because, you know, I would see somebody, I won't even name names here, I saw somebody win a gold medal, and their first thing they did when they went back was they started sending texts on their phone, kind of calling out people who had been hating on them and who didn't believe on them. And it was like, wow, man, you know, you just did probably the coolest thing that you're going to do in jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? You just had this amazing moment. You won, you know, a gold medal at this big tournament, and you're thinking about the people who don't like you.
Yeah, man.
I thought that was really interesting, right? Like, shouldn't you be sending, like, you know, a message to people that are, you would just hope that you would gravitate towards a positive moment right then.
To enjoy it.
To enjoy it, right? Absolutely. To savor it instead of, you know. So if I were to ever win ADCC, I think we're probably safe. But if it happens, I won't be sending a message to people I hate afterwards. Mm-hmm. Or any tournament. I think it even proved to me, or it reminded me, because even after I won at JJIF, man, you know, in terms of scale, that is like a hundredth of you know, if I'm probably being generous to myself, of what an ADCC kind of thing means. It's way down. But it's still, I still reminded myself, after I was holding the gold medal, oh, feel good about this. Send a message to somebody that would be happy for you right now. Mm-hmm. You know, do something to increase the glow of this moment.
Yeah, somebody supported you on this journey.
Yeah, and even not on the mat, you know, for anything that you're doing in life. Man, if it's a good thing that's happening, stick with that. Keep that momentum rising.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? Don't kill your own positive momentum here.
And share that moment with others.
Exactly. Definitely. Yeah, you can bring them up.
Which we did. Afterwards, we all went out to dinner and
that was cool,
you know,
right?
It was
yeah.
awesome, dude.
Some of the people celebrated a little too much. Not even our party. Just like, you know, like, somebody fucked up at the hotel.
Yeah.
Remember, yeah, one of the other delegations, we won't name names, they kicked down this door, this big glass door. We were, like, walking around the next day, and we, like, walked out the front door, and we were like, that, there should be a door there. But
the
yeah.
official story is they ran into this glass door and shattered it, which we both know is...
That's a lie. That's a lie. No, nobody accidentally runs through a glass door because we saw the guy and shatters it. First of all, it doesn't happen. Second of all, you would be in the hospital. You know what I mean? You would be destroyed. But like, if you were to kick it with the bottom of your foot, I think you said Sparta style, which is perfect. then yeah, you know, you might fuck it up and break it without meaning to. And so yeah, that's
yeah, hit it right in this.
Some people
sweet
spot. Celebrated too much.
Yeah.
So find your balance.
We got there at 2 a.m. after dinner and everything. Door was there, and people were in the lobby.
To the best of our knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People were in the lobby getting drunk, so that probably played a factor in that whole situation.
Oh,
but.
I'm sure.
So, you said New York is next for competition. Anything after that?
New York Open, man, I'm half in, half out for, because I'm pretty sure I'm getting my brown belt, so it's like, do I do Nogi Worlds as a brown belt, as a new brown belt? You know, that would be cool, especially because I love leg locks. You know, I'm a leg lock aficionado, so it'd be cool to be able to go and do calf slicers and knee bars and toe holds and that kind of thing.
Because all that opens up in brown belt.
Oh, yeah. I'm real excited for that part, but it's kind of right now, let's get the brown belt and then let's figure it out.
Okay.
I know something I'll definitely be doing, and I'm starting to study heel hooks a little bit more, is I would love to go to the ADCC trials next year.
you know, having been mat side, well, you know, why not go give it a shot? Man, it's leg locks and wrestling. I know how to wrestle. I know how to do leg locks. Mm-hmm. Man, let's give that a shot. Right. So that sounds really cool.
Definitely.
Get that going. Next year, there's about 51 weeks left. Who's counting? and then, man, there's another one. JJF Worlds, of course, next year.
Damn right. I'm in. So what about, I asked you about code of character for grappling. You said consistency was one thing that stands out to you. Why did you say that?
I said consistency because I feel like it is easy to have a good moment. I feel like we see a lot of people come in and they'll have, like, it's belt promotion time at our academy. Mats are very full. You know what I mean?
Right.
The mats, you know, everybody shows back up as soon as that invite goes out. And I feel like it's easy to show up and have a good day. I feel like it's easy to show up and look good, you know, when you're only training a couple times a week. But, man, if you're there every day, you're going to have some off days. But that's where the improvement's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That, and when you're able to do something over and over again to the point where it's a habit, and when you're able to just deal with all of the difficulties that are going to come with training that much, or doing anything that much, when you're able to enforce that kind of discipline, then you're going to be able to handle the difficulties that come when you compete or when you go do anything that's difficult. It's just, if you want high character, then I think that a commitment to a consistent regimen of some kind is what builds it. And it can't be for somebody else. It can't be to get a check mark from somebody. It has to be something that you're doing because you want to be better. That has to lead everything, is that passion about and that understanding, that forethought and foresight. Okay, I'm doing this because of this reason. And so it becomes easier. It's not a question of, do I want this donut or do I not want this donut? It's, do I want this donut or do I want to make sure that I make weight? You know, and well, I want to make weight way more than I want this donut. Well, man, then it's not a sacrifice. You know what I mean? I feel like so many people feel like they're sacrificing so much when they live a more disciplined lifestyle. I don't see it that way. I'm not sacrificing anything. I'm getting something cool. I'm getting to go and do these cool tournaments and do these amazing things. And if I didn't have consistency and I just tried to do the good things only sometimes and maybe try to rationalize, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like I would have a lot of difficulties. I'm the kind of guy, as soon as I start rationalizing with myself, I'm able to make any deal. You know what I mean? I immediately turn such an amazing deal maker. Well, I'll do this, you know, with an alarm. And I'm only going to sleep 5 more minutes. There's no way in hell it's only going to be 5 more minutes. There's not a goddamn chance. Suddenly, well, I don't need breakfast this morning. I'll make it 15. Well, you know what, man? You know, I'm pretty clean. Maybe just, you know, a quick little, you know, touch up with the in the sink I can get away with. Man, 23, no problem. And then suddenly, you know, I'm 37 minutes later rolling out of bed. Man, you can't do that. You have to have that consistency that, oh, this is the time I'm up. And this is the time I'm doing stuff. And if I don't have anything to do, then at least I'm up and I'm out, you know. Then I have free time. Let me go find something to do with my free time.
Right.
Makes sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. And something we had kind of talked about is, you know, one of the things I feel like is important with the code of character is, like, you know, my life isn't grappling. Grappling is part of my life.
Yeah.
So I do the grappling part because I want to be a better person in my life.
Yeah, there you go.
And those things with consistency and discipline are a part of that that affects the rest of my life.
When they talk about how grappling is supposed to give you tools for your life, that's what they mean. You know, it's those kind of things. And if you don't have the consistency to build a habit, then you're never going to get anything out of jiu-jitsu because it's all about habit building. You know, what the tools are. They're habits. And if you don't have consistency, you're not going to build that.
Right.
And so I think that's really important.
Agreed, man.
Man, I did not always remember that my life wasn't supposed to just be jiu-jitsu. Especially because it's my job. It's my, you know, most of my friendships, you know, like half the relationships I've had are been with people that I found through jiu-jitsu. You know, I don't always have, I have recently started going out more and expanding that circle in healthier ways outside of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And which has definitely been rewarding. I would recommend it to everybody.
For sure.
It can't be all jits all the time.
You gotta go
do all this shit.
I mean, we're talking about it, but we're podcasting right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's why people tune in.
Yeah.
People aren't going to listen to me, you know, talk about, you know, comic books or something.
Yeah. They might, because that's cool.
I also know plenty about comics.
Yeah. So as far as transformation, when I asked you about like what was, you know, what's important about that, you mentioned being honest with myself and my ego. Why is that important?
Man, when it comes to, so I forget the exact question that it was about transformation, but I'll just talk about transformation and when, how you can transform yourself. Because I feel like I'm somebody who had to spend a lot of time changing myself because I used to be really self-conscious and really arrogant at the same time. Fernando describes me as uncoachable when I first showed up. And I recently got trusted to teach my own classes. So I think I've made a far enough journey with that, hopefully. And it all came from really brutally honest self-assessment of myself and why things were going wrong. The same way that you would necessarily, you know, maybe on a jiu-jitsu mat, like, okay, I'm getting caught in De La Hiva guard. Okay, I need a better way to deal with De La Hiva guard. I would kind of do that in my life about like, okay, I get messed up when it comes to this interpersonal aspect of my life. Okay, yeah, and then just examine what are other people doing that is successful and what am I doing that's definitely not working and where can I bridge that gap? But man, just, you know, shelving your ego in that, realizing that something that you've held for a really long time or a belief or a hunch might be bullshit. And, you know, probably is. You know, if you really spend a lot of time thinking about something, you usually have at least some weird spin on it. And being willing to take someone's advice over mine if I saw that they were happier in a situation than I was. You know what I mean? If this person is happier in their dating life, listening to them about dating and being willing to supplant my opinion for theirs, or at least taking theirs very seriously. I feel like there was a long time where I didn't take people's opinions very seriously. Instead, I very nervously wanted them to hear my opinion because I wanted them to value it and put some kind of approval on it that really I didn't need. You know what I mean? And so that kind of honest assessment of myself is what has led to a lot of transformation away from being a lot more petulant than I used to be.
And I think that's one of the beautiful things about our art or grappling is we're not in front of the TV. We're in competitions and rolling with each other. So those self-evaluation moments or moments of reflection are way more transparent.
Yes.
Because we're putting ourselves in these situations where we are our weaknesses are exposed, you know, and it's up to you whether or not you want to address it or do you want to keep being an asshole or whatever it is that, you know, is going on with you, you know?
You know what I like? I'm kind of just now realizing it, so maybe I'm speaking out of the side of my mouth here, but I do like that in jiu-jitsu you're playing offense and defense at the same time. I think that that leads to a much more honest sport because I feel like what I saw at a lot of guys that I grew up with, because I grew up playing football and playing baseball and playing all kinds of stuff. I knew so many kids who would just say, oh, I'm just not good at that. You know what I mean? Or when it came to like, I don't play defense when it comes to like basketball or, you know, I'm only an offensive. I only do this when it comes to football or these big team sports. When it's one person having to do everything and you're winning and losing off your own merits, you have to be really honest, right? You know, when it comes to a sport like jiu-jitsu, man, there is no, nobody's ever, I've seen people lose a basketball game and think, oh, well, I could kick that guy's ass in a fight. Nobody loses a fight and thinks like, oh, well, I could kick his ass in a basketball game. You know what I mean? Like, it's such an honest sport, of when you, especially because you have to tap out and you have to tell the guy no more. I think that it certainly will, if you stick around long enough and you tap out long enough, you'll learn how to be honest with yourself about your limits.
Yeah, for sure. And something about offense and defense, like wrestling.
I don't know if that went anywhere. Maybe that was just me.
Well, it triggered something in me. Like wrestling made me be more assertive in life because I was always more like go with the flow, more introverted. And you can't be that way in wrestling and score points.
No.
You have to be assertive, you know. You have to have a sense of urgency with what you want to accomplish. And wrestling taught that to me. You know, and that's helped me in the rest of my life, you know, and I feel like I've become more of a balanced person because of that.
To wrestle is to struggle, and to struggle is to live. So anybody who can get good at wrestling can get good at life. You're not guaranteed that, but it's a It's definitely a big part of it.
Yeah,
it
gives you a great edge. So is there anything that we haven't covered or anything that you'd want to say to the audience before we wrap it up?
The Yamasaki Academy saved my life, and I would recommend it to anybody.
Yeah, and
wrestling saved my life, and I would recommend that to anybody as well. And jiu-jitsu has continued that saving of my life. Oh, I'll talk about my start in wrestling. Why don't we do that here?
Okay.
That way I can always, if anybody ever asks me about my start in wrestling, I just send him to this. So this is how I got started in the sport of wrestling, and we can end on this. And I'll even talk about my time up through Maryland. So started in the seventh grade, midway through the season. I was playing football, but I was horrible because I was little. I was much, much smaller than everybody else.
That's
why
I started wrestling too. I was
yeah,
little.
Right, yeah. Well, I got to wrestling, and I was actually pretty good size, ironically. But just when it came to football, I was little. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so the quarterback on my team was wrestling. His name was Nick. His dad was one of the coaches. And we had some big football party at the end of the year at my house, my mom's house. And Nick's dad ended up like getting like really drunk and staying for a long time and, you know, telling all these funny stories. And I thought he was a really cool guy. And he tells me, you should come out for wrestling. We need somebody on the team your size. Nick needs a practice partner. I thought Nick was so cool. So I was, you know, the quarterback of the football team. Oh,
yeah,
man,
yeah.
Yeah, of course, dude. And I show up, and immediately it's like, whatever, Nick, this is amazing. Like, I immediately just loved it. I only wrestled for like a month and a half, but I was hooked. I showed up the next year. I like won the county championship and all this. Like, you know, I was hooked from there. I wrestled through high school, but I was super average.
And this was in Maryland?
In Maryland,
okay.
Montgomery County.
Yeah.
I was really average. I was good. I would win a lot more than I would lose, but I would still, you know, drop matches that maybe I shouldn't, or you know, I would never, you know, I never placed a state or anything like that. But I loved the sport. And I said to myself, I cannot leave wrestling behind. You know, I love it so much. It's so much fun. I can't imagine being done with it. And this was also around the time that, you know, wrestling media was growing more. And so I was able to follow the sport a lot more. You know what I mean? And that was cool. And I said, wherever I go to college, I'm going to try to wrestle. Happened to go to the University of Maryland, which was Division I. And this ended up being a year where they were top 10 in the nation. So it was like really walking into the fire.
Dang.
You know, these guys were amazing. And the very first day, the coach takes us all out to the track and he tells us to just start running. And one of the captains asked something. He's like, oh yeah, some of you guys, he said something about roster cuts. Not everybody's going to make it. I need you guys to just start running.
this is a survival of the fittest moment?
That's what I took it as. That's what I took it as. And I said, okay, this is actually great news. Because I cannot out-wrestle any of these guys. All these guys are multiple time state champions and, like, you know, have placed at these national wrestling tournaments that I, you know, didn't even know existed. And I'm never going to be able to beat them on the mat. But I'm willing to run until an ambulance shows up. And that's what I did. And this New York State champion named Zeke ended up just kind of breaking. And not, you know, he didn't show up excited to wrestle. He showed up wrestling because he thought he had to. And when he found out there was a way out and that there was going to be cuts, he ended up getting cut. And so I got to work out with the team for a nice amount of time. Didn't ever, you know, come close to moving up the depth chart from last, but it was an amazing time.
Awesome.
When I got done with wrestling, I started up jiu-jitsu, and tomorrow will be 7 years, and I've never looked back.
Nice. Well,
what else we got?
Well, I just want to thank you, man. Thanks for being on the show, brother.
Very fun. Thank you for having me, Chris. I appreciate it.
Is there anybody that people can get a hold of you, find you, follow you?
Yeah, follow me on Instagram. Follow my jiu-jitsu Instagram. I have two. I have one that's just more like, you know, not memes about cutting weight and stuff, you know. I have, but the jiu-jitsu one is Moranguinho BJJ. Moranguinho. Moranguinho. It's the little strawberry. It means little strawberry. It's the nickname Fernando gave me when I first showed up because people kept trying to choke me and I wouldn't tap. And their choke, but their choke wouldn't put me out, to be fair. I said, well, I'm only going to tap if I feel like I'm going unconscious.
Right, right.
And they weren't putting me out. People needed to learn. A lot of people show up to a fight willing to die. I show up fights willing to kill. No, but anyway, so it. But apparently, it also means the Moringuinho is also the strawberry shortcake doll in Brazil. So every hilarious. Once in a while, I get people like giving me shit for that. Bernardo always laughs when he hears it, but yeah, Moringuinho BJJ.
Awesome.
I love it.
Yeah, and for everybody at home who wants to follow us at Grappling Real, R-E-A-L, we have a fan page on Facebook. All right, love you guys. Have a good one.